This is a republic if you can keep it, with former Republican Party Executive Director Jeff Timmer and former Democratic Party Chairman Mark Brewer.
Welcome to another week of A Republic If You Can Keep It. I'm Mark Brewer.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. Later in the podcast, we'll talk state politics, taxes, and the state's investment infrastructure with Democratic Vice Chair of the State Senate Appropriations Committee, Senator Curtis Hertel Jr.
But as always, we begin with our weekly legitimate political discourse. And Jeff, this week, even today as we're recording, we see the continued expansion and takeover of the Republican Party by Trump. Tell us about what just happened in the last few days since Trump's rally, just since Trump's rally in Macomb.
Well, the thumbnail sketches, Trump shows up in Macomb County on Saturday, says all his crazy shit. On Monday, Fred Upton, who's been in Congress since the 1980s, 36 years in Congress, voted for impeachment of Trump as being opposed due to redistricting by Trump-loving Republican Bill Huizenga. Bill Huizenga was going to trounce Fred Upton because the Trumpification of the party is complete and total. And so Trump comes in, Fred Upton announces his retirement after nearly four decades. That's the reality of today's Republican Party. And yet there's still story after story and reporter after reporter who likes to talk about Trump's influence waning and the division in the Republican Party for the establishment to take back the party. There is no battle. That battle is over. The only battle that exists is, they're all wearing tinfoil hats. Some are just wearing full tinfoil suits. And then today we find out the state party chair, Ron Weiser, a story in Detroit News that broke this afternoon, is trying to pressure Tom Leonard, the 2018 nominee for attorney general, the former speaker who's running again for that position, force him out of the race and encourage him instead to run for Congress so that Trump's handpicked candidate, Matt DiPerno, will waltz to that nomination at the convention without any fight on the convention floor. And that's what they're looking at. In Weiser's perfect world, Weiser thinks Tom Leonard would be a far better candidate for the party in November. We'll be able to raise more money. We'll be able to at least put up a better showing against Dana Nessel as she goes on to likely reelection in November than Matt DiPerno. But the reality is that the Trump loyalists and the evil spirit of Donald Trump has manifested itself so thoroughly within the Republican Party that Matt DiPerno is going to win that convention on April 23rd. He's going to be nominated by the Republicans in August, and he's going to go on and be trounced in November. And that's the reality that the Republicans have to deal with. They're focused on Trump candidates winning primaries and winning convention battles and not being in position to win general elections in November.
Yeah, I mean, this really is the continuing Trumpification of the party. I mean, Weiser was always there, obviously, in order to get elected. He brought Maddox on board. He was smart to do that, obviously. She seems to be really running the party these days, and Weiser's completely disappeared. But now we see him coming back and trying to push, Leonard out of the race. Don't think he'll try to do the bribe scheme that he got caught doing with Stan Grott in 2018. But who knows, what they'll try to do. Maybe offers to finance the congressional run or something. Yeah, but it's really remarkable. And Mr. Establishment Republican, Ron Weiser, in this state, clearly now firmly in the Trump camp and trying to push Leonard out in favor of DiPerno. And you got to think that somewhere in the queue now is, the same kind of pressure to help Karamo, right? And other kind of folks in the Republican Party. This is just remarkable and really sad to see a major political party continue to go down this path, Jeff. I feel so bad. Your former party, and just off the deep end in terms of the people they're nominating and their anti-democratic with a small d impulses. It's just terrible.
Well, the putrefaction of the body of the Republican Party is complete. The cancer has manifested and metastasized to every inch and cell within the Republican Party. And there's one of two outcomes. It's going to eventually either kill the Republican Party or it's going to kill American democracy. I guess I'm voting for the former.
We also saw more developments this week in terms of the Chatfield investigation. That may be at long last. There's finally an investigation going on inside the State House about the use of funds when he was Speaker. You know, just adding to the ongoing apparently state police investigation that we hear about periodically when they conduct a raid or whatever. And that just seems also to, you know, be evidence of further rot inside the Republican Party in this state.
I think you're right. And it's the unfortunate byproduct of one party being in kind of absolute power for a very, very long time, coupled with somebody with absolutely zero character or rails or ethics being put into position of power and leadership. It is the worst case scenario where an immature, corrupt individual like Lee Chatfield ends up in that very powerful the speaker position in Michigan's legislature. People don't have a feel for exactly how much unilateral power exists with the speaker, how many millions and millions, tens of millions of dollars are at their personal whim and control, with no oversight and no public exposure, and not even any internal exposure. They don't have to really answer to anybody, even in the House of Representatives, for their conduct, for what they deem worthy to spend those millions and millions of dollars on. And I think that as this is exposed, it could get really, really ugly for not just for Lee Chatfield, but the collateral damage among Republicans in Lansing could be considerable.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, I'll be the first to acknowledge that these scandals have happened on both sides of the aisle. It is part of the problem of long-term control by one body, because there's no accountability. And, you know, and our legislature doesn't have any independent investigative committee or individual who holds people accountable. It seems that when we've seen these scandals, like with Corser and Gamrat, or going back to David Jay, what doesn't get you expelled is your misbehavior. You get expelled if they don't like you and you misbehave. That seems to be the standard. Because we've got, you know, Pete Lucido never got punished for his misconduct, and he's now Macomb County prosecutor. We've got sitting reps, you know, and senators who've also engaged in misconduct that I think even a few years ago, certainly decades ago, would have gotten them expelled on a bipartisan basis, or at least disciplined somehow. But now it's just like, well, people don't bat an eye about it. And a lot of it, I think, is politics driven. You know, people need the votes. They don't want to open up a seat. And like I said, it comes down to, you know, if you remain popular with your colleagues, you're pretty immune to getting disciplined for pretty much any misbehavior.
Taxes, scandals, and politics up next, as Mark and Jeff are joined by Senator Curtis Hertel Jr. on A Republic If You Can Keep It.
Epic MRA is pleased to be a sponsor of this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm whose principals have more than four decades of experience measuring public opinion on federal, state, and local issues, from who's ahead in a race for governor or Congress, to local support for a proposed zoning change.
Our clients include media outlets, school districts, state agencies, local governments, and membership organizations across the state. Whether it's measuring voter opinions about who's up or down in elections, or if ballot proposals or legislation enjoys public support, Epic MRA has been Michigan's premier go-to pollster for 30 years.
Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
Joining the conversation this week is State Senator Curtis Hertel. Senator Hertel came to the Senate after more than a decade of service in local government as an Ingham County Commissioner and later as the county's Register of Deeds. As a county commissioner, he successfully led the charge for creating the Ingham Health Plan, a low-cost program to provide uninsured residents with basic health care. As Register of Deeds, Hertel pioneered a program to protect homeowners against having their homes stolen by identity thieves and foreclosure scams. In the state Senate, he plays a very important role as the Democratic vice chair of the Appropriations Committee.
Senator Hertel's family has a long history of public service. He is the son of former State House co-speaker Curtis Hertel. His uncles, Dennis and John Hertel, both served in the state legislature, with Dennis also serving 12 years in Congress. His younger brother, Kevin, was elected to the House of Representatives in 2016 and is currently running for the state Senate in Macomb County. In addition, his wife, Elizabeth, serves as director of the state's Department of Health and Human Services.
It's a pleasure to welcome my longtime friend and a member of a family that has given such tremendous public service to Michigan, to a republic, if you can keep it. Senator Hertel, great to have you with us. I'm going to call you Curtis because we've known each other for a long time, and I've known your family for a long time. And, you know, you're such a veteran of politics. There's just so much we want to talk to you about. But let's start with this. You know, what do you think about the prospects of the Democrats for the first time since 1983 winning a majority in the state Senate? What's your take?
I think we have an excellent opportunity. I think that this is, you know, the fair maps, and thanks to all those that worked on the ballot initiative that got us these fair maps. But you really see the Senate being going from almost impossible. I mean, a situation where, you know, we went last cycle from 11 seats to 16 seats in one night. We picked up the most seats since Watergate. But we would have had to have a tremendous year to pick up three more seats. And now you look around the state and we have great candidates. You look at Kristen McDonald running up in the Midland seat, my brother running in Macomb, Veronica Kleinfeld running in Macomb, Darren Camilleri, Sam Singh, Terry Sabo, David LeGrand. I'm going to forget somebody, I'm sure. But when you look across this state in seats where we're favored to win, we have great candidates. And the governor won 23 of these seats last time. Biden won 20 of them. It's 19 to majority. Probably one of the tougher seats in that list is my brother Kevin. But I can tell you, my family's represented that district for a very long time. He ran 9 points above the president, and he's working his tail off. And I think we win that seat, and I think that's a path to majority right there. So I feel very confident in, going in. You know, obviously, these off-year presidentials can be tough, but I think the governor's strong. You look at all of her numbers look positive, and I feel good about where we are going in. So I think we have an excellent opportunity to take the Senate back.
No, I think you're right. You know, I've been you were talking about the maps and you know, the Senate Dems having only 11 seats, and you know, certainly the role I've played in those maps over the years is no secret. And I was glad to see this process work out now in a way that that gives Michigan voters a chance to choose the party that they want to represent them. And I really think right now that Michigan voters are likely to choose Democratic candidates, all else being equal, considering how far down the rabbit hole the Republican Party is today, and the red wave nationally or in Michigan in 2022, I think is premature and in not necessarily a fait accompli. And the Michigan Republicans seem to be doing their damnedest to defy any national red wave, if there is going to be one, by nominating kooks at the top of the ticket.
I totally agree. I mean, look at this, and here's the thing. When I'm sitting in Lansing and I'm thinking about the people I represent, I'm thinking about the things that affect them everyday life at their kitchen table. And what we're seeing from the Republican Party is just constant nonsense, no matter what. I mean, we had we talked about COVID forever and, you know, the fake conspiracy theories around that. We had a health policy committee where we literally let people come in and tell conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory with nothing after it. You know, you look at Tom Barrett, who's running for Congress in this district because of, partisanship and, you know, some belief he has, voted against 5,000 jobs for his own community. We're holding these dollars hostage for investment to help Michigan recover. they are so obsessed with whatever's on Fox News and OWN and, you know, the right wing blogosphere, and not actually focused on the things that actually matter to every gay Michiganders in their lives. And I think at the end of the day, the governor did a wonderful job protecting people, and Michigan's economy is on the rebound. And they can tell all the lies they want about that. But at the end of the day, Michigan is set up very well for a post-pandemic world. And the governor has been fighting for strategic investments in that, the largest investment in schools we've ever seen. These are all reasons why, when you look at the actual facts, the governor has done a fantastic job. And I think that they would love to focus in on election fraud and conspiracy theories and COVID, because the reality is they have no actual answers for Michigan's people. They don't have an agenda any longer. I think that's the one thing that Trump did to the Republican Party, wiped out the agenda. You know, there used to be a party of small government, and, you know, you might disagree with them on stuff, but at least they had, you know, some reasonable points and we could have an argument. This is not that. And I firmly believe that, you know, if this was the election that they think it is, the red wave that they think is coming, then why can't they get a real candidate for governor? Why is the candidates for attorney general, it's a battle of who can be more, you know, close to Trump, and Tom's trying to figure out Leonard's trying to figure out a way around that, but looks like DiPerno is going to win. You know, why do they have, you know, two jokes of a candidate for Secretary of State, a legislator that's done absolutely nothing, and, you know, somebody who wants to talk about election fraud every day? They don't have, you would think, right, that in a year where it's supposed to be, oh, that the Republicans have the big red wave, they have all the winds at their back, you would think that would mean that they're going to have these great candidates. And the answer is no, they don't. They don't have great candidates. They have, the police chief tried to run a campaign, had every, you know, Republican person in town saying how great he was and blew that. You have this new, you know, rich guy coming in trying to buy the race. I've never met anybody who calls themselves a quality guru and didn't think a hell of a lot of themselves. You know, I still think that, you know, you have Saldano and Tudor Dixon and all these other people running around. But I mean, at the end of the day, if you really look at it, I mean, these are not the cream of the crop of the of Michigan Republicans. And I think, you know, the governor's record is strong. And I think if you looked at polling, while people are upset with the president, and I understand that those things do not actually go down to legislative Democrats, and they don't go on down to the governor. I think that those numbers are much, much better. And so I feel good about where we are.
Curtis, if I could, I'd like to turn to a related topic. And you have spent your entire legislative career under term limits. And your father's career was shortened in the legislature by term limits back in the 90s. Can you reflect on us, the impact that you've seen that term limits has had? And I would also like to hear your views about the reform proposal that's out there now. What do you think?
I think term limits have been one of the worst things that's ever happened in Michigan. I think that it's hard to look at the last 30 years since term limits and not see that Michigan was a top 10 state in education. We've gone down to the bottom. We were one of the top states investing in infrastructure, and we've gone towards the bottom. One of the top spending in higher ed and went to the bottom. You look at all the things that actually, how you would measure how government does in protecting people, we do worse than we did before term limits. And the reason for that, I believe, is that a couple things. One, people don't have the knowledge base when they come in. They come in with all these preconceived notions. So that they're worse at it. They don't know how to get a bill done or how to write a bill, or how to write their own amendments. Staff and lobbyists end up doing most of the work. We end up talking about the same issues over and over and over again because we never solve anything. But I think that the thing that's biggest lacking under this is courage. Everybody's looking for their next job. Everyone wants to run for something else or please somebody else to get a job afterwards. And so they don't have they haven't built up the relationships with their constituents so that they can say to them, this is what I believe. And I know you don't agree with me, but this is why I think I'm right. And really, more than anything else, that's the role of a legislator. Our job, to be a leader, you have to do what you think is right, regardless of what polls or anything else say. And I think you don't see that in the legislature any longer because people haven't actually built those relationships. And you see less work across the aisle for the same reason. I really think it's made the legislature a much more reactive place and has damaged the institution and really damaged Michigan. In terms of the proposal, I don't believe in term limits as an idea because I think that people in a democracy, people should be able to vote for who they want to vote for. But do I think that this is this is better than what we currently have? Yes. And so would I support something? I've never been a big, the best is the enemy of the very good. So is this, better? Yes. And so I would support it for sure. It doesn't help me at all. And, I'm fine with that.
In terms of some other issues that were for the legislature, you just talked a moment ago about how you think the legislative elections are going to be determined not based on Biden's popularity or unpopularity, national issues. What issues do you think are going to drive the legislative elections this fall?
I think education is a big one. I think that people still feel that there was certainly learning loss during COVID, and how we rebound from that, I think, is incredibly important to people. There's been a lot of strategic investments, but we have a lot of work to do in our schools. And I think that those will be a big one. I think jobs will be a big one in the economy. People can find a job. It's not, in all honesty, businesses are looking. But finding a job that I think is meaningful and moving towards more of a career than just a gig job, I think, is important to a lot of people. And I think that's actually something that will be on top of people's minds moving forward. And I think the governor's got a good record on that. I think at the end of the day, obviously if something happens to the Supreme Court with abortion, that will be a major, major issue in the election. I hope that doesn't happen, but that would certainly, I think, Michigan being one of the states that has a law on the books that outlaws abortion immediately, that would be a disaster and would set women's rights back in this state. So that would be, I think, obviously a major issue. But I think I believe that elections really come down to, do I trust this person? Does this person care about me? And is this person going to do what's right for my family? And that's why I think education and economy and those things are the things that matter the most. We'll certainly talk about roads, I'm sure, and infrastructure and all those things. The governor's done everything she can in that regard. But I think most of it comes down to those individual decisions that are affecting people every single day.
There's a big debate going on, and this is not surprising. All three of us have been around a while, about tax cuts, right?
Yes.
It's an election year. There's a debate over tax cuts, given the surplus and all the other things. Where do you think that's going to end up? What's your take on that, Curtis?
I think that I would prefer more meaningful tax cuts like the earned income tax credit and the retirement tax credit that I think are targeted to people that actually are hurting out there and actually do a better job of actually making people invest back in the economy because they spend those dollars. The Governor Snyder cut corporate taxes and raised taxes on everybody else, including the poorest among us. And so I think that is a solid message that we should be moving forward. I think we can get some gas tax relief, but I think it has to be done in a smart way. What the Republicans proposed would have destroyed the actual work that's being done on the roads right now, which is frankly ridiculous. And I think the most important thing, Mark, is that I want tax cuts that actually go into people's pockets. And so when we talk about things like the gas tax, there is no guarantee in that bill or any other bill that gas prices are actually lowered by that. I mean, you drive all around this country. I and my staff put together a sheet that looks at what the gas tax is and what the actual cost of gas is in the states. They're not that related, actually. If you look at it, there are states that have lower taxes and higher gas prices and higher taxes and lower gas prices. And so the idea that, sure, gas would go down in the first couple of days by 25 cents and the next day would get raised up 25 cents, within a week later, would anybody notice it? And would anybody care? I'd rather actually put money in people's pockets because I think that actually ensures that they get those dollars you know, they're the ones that are dealing with inflation, and it's not just on gas, it's on food and everything else. So help those people actually survive. And I think, so I think the EITC, which has got a terrible name, by the way, we as progressives got to get a better job of actually naming things. I mean, the EITC is a working family tax cut. That's what that is. And the idea that we try to, you know, we call it something more complicated than that, I think sometimes, you know, the earned income tax credit, I don't know what average citizen understands what that means, but a working family tax credit they do. So I think this is one of those things where we might maybe outsmart ourselves. But I think those kinds of things actually do a lot more for working families than, you know, a gas tax. It's going to put, you know, I'm not saying that, listen, an extra 10, 11 bucks a month might mean something to some families. I'm not trying to besmirch that. But I'd rather make sure they actually gets in their hands and not the hands of somebody who's already gouging them at the pump.
Let's shift gears a little bit here. One of the issues that I've been focused on, and certainly that we've been talking about and has been in the news since the start of the year, are the behavioral scandals involving Republicans. Speaker Lee Chatfield and being accused of statutory rape by his sister-in-law. The sexual predatory nature of former Senator, now Macomb County Prosecutor Pete Lucido. And this hasn't got enough attention, I don't think, is that sitting with you in the Senate today is a man who pled guilty to criminal sexual assault. And that has kind of, everybody has just kind of treated that with a yawn. There has been no outcry for John Bison to resign. There's been no pressure on the Republican majority in the Senate to remove him from office, to pay any price for his criminal sexual behavior that he pled guilty to. That's what I want to stress there. This isn't just an accusation. The man pleaded guilty to criminal behavior. And so there's a pattern of kind of look the other way, it seems, when it comes to the Republicans in power in the legislature in both chambers.
Yeah, listen, I mean, I think that the idea that that Dr. Bison still sits on, you know, the important committees that are making decisions about people's lives, I think is certainly troublesome considering what he just pled guilty to. And, you know, we kicked two members of the House out for various reasons. I mean, but let's be real. At the end of the day, Todd Corser and Cindy Gamrat were kicked out of the House for being disliked. You know, they certainly did, you know, I didn't agree with them on a lot of things. They did stuff wrong, but nothing like this. Because they're in a situation where we're now three seats away from the majority, there's a 0% chance there's going to be any consequences for them because they don't want to get those people, you know, they don't want to lose one more seat. You know, when they were down two seats, all of a sudden they had to negotiate even more than they had to before. So I agree with you, and you know, he's gonna have a tough primary, and you know, he's running for re-election on top of that, which seems crazy. You know, I mean, like 20 years ago, could you be, you know, plead guilty to this and then, you know, file for office 2 days later? The Trumpification of American politics, I think has really made all these things, you know, you don't have the responsibility any longer. You know, it used to be if something like this happened, you know, even 10 years before, it would be a non-starter. You do the opposition research, you'd find it in the book, and you'd say, this guy can't run. And nowadays, it happens all the time. It's very, very sad.
Yeah. Well, if this would have happened when, your dad or my former boss, Paul Hilligans, were in charge of the House, they would have taken care of this and moved that person. They would have not dealt with that, with the headache. Dick Postumus, Dan DeGroat, Ken Sikkema, yeah. People like that would have dealt with this. And there's just no pressure. There's no political pressure. There's no media pressure. And I'll say, you know, this would be a great opportunity for, the Democrats in the Senate to every day stand up there and point out the fact that there's a criminal sexual predator sitting in their midst and ask him to resign. That's the kind of thing that would get attention. Somebody would be forced to write about the cameras in the chamber and the scribes in the chamber would be forced to report on it.
Yeah, we have less scribes than we used to, but certainly I think that's true. I think that's part of the problem too. I think in general is that we just have the degradation of the media that actually covers the Michigan legislature. You really don't have the same kind of coverage that you used to have, and I think we're missing that quite often, because that's also, I think that you get more on Twitter and Facebook in terms of news of legislature than you, unless the average person's reading Hers and Gong War, which I doubt they are.
The sexual misbehavior and crimes that have been going on in Lansing are one thing, but they've also exposed potential financial irregularities, certainly when it comes to campaign finance and misuse of C4s. Perhaps, but now there's also reports of investigation into the official House business account under Lee Chatfield. The one thing that, when you look at politics all around the country, when one party has control for a long period of time in any chamber, whether it's the federal Congress or state legislatures, these stories about financial scandals seem to manifest themselves over time. And the fact that the Republicans have been in power in the Senate for nearly 40 years and in the House for over a dozen years leads to potential abuses of power. And, I certainly think investigations into the use of taxpayer dollars is warranted here in both chambers to make sure that the kinds of things that are being exposed in the Chatfield scandal, kind of light switch employees, ghost employees that Bert Johnson was convicted of
for sure.
Before. Those aren't just abuses of power or unethical. Those are criminal acts, and they're potentially have gone on and may still be going on.
Yeah, and first of all, let's be real. The Republicans have been controlling the Michigan legislature for 20 years. But the one thing I'd say is that Democrats had this exact same thing under my father. I mean, when my dad, his first week on the job as a speaker, got a call from the fiscal agency, and there was a whistleblower, and they had to deal with all those things that were happening then. I think you're exactly right. When one party has been in power for as long as they have, there are very few checks and balances. The speaker has almost unlimited power. And what that really means is that when you have somebody who had all these other scandals going on around them, you sure better check what else was happening while you were on state funds, because the speaker can do a lot of things that I don't think the average citizen knows how powerful the speaker of the House really is. And the majority of the Senate has a lot more checks and balances. The speaker controls almost everything. I think you're absolutely right. There has to be a investigations into that. And really, all this should be more public anyways. We're one of the only states that has no sunshine in our legislature whatsoever. We have, because of Citizens United and our weak campaign finance laws, pretty much unlimited money from anybody getting into our politics. The fact that we're even talking there was a bribe. Why would anybody have to bribe him? I mean, there's like 9 legal ways to get the money to him at this point. I mean, our system has to change, because at the end of the day, I'm glad what the citizens did and took control of. They're going to get their own legislators. By actually being able to have fair lines for the first time. That's good. But none of it will matter if everybody who gets there is playing by these same cesspool rules. And so we need to fix those rules as well in order to actually make sure that when people are getting to Lansing, they're doing the people's business and not their own.
I think you both are making great points. I mean, we've got the worst of all possible worlds. Worst lobbying laws, worst ethics laws, some of the worst campaign finance laws. There was a time back in the 70s when Michigan really led the way on FOIA and campaign finance and lobbying. There hasn't been anything significant since then, and frankly, we've gone backwards rather dramatically. And I think, going back to our earlier discussion, Curtis, this is why voters support term limits. They see this corruption, they see this misbehavior, and they just say a pox on all the legislators, not good, honest legislators like you, get lumped in with everybody else.
Well, Mark, that's the hardest part of the sell job, right? You have to tell people that this legislature needs a little more time just to get it right. And so I believe that's true, but it does make the selling of it very much harder. I agree completely that the broken system, has to be fixed by giving these people more time, I think it's a difficult sell for some people.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we do need, and there's been talk that a couple of my clients have been working on things. I think we just need to bypass the legislature and do FOIA reform and do campaign finance and ethics reform by ballot proposal. Because, I, you know, even if we get a, quote, better legislature, a more representative legislature, there's just too much self-interest, Curtis. And I'm not blaming you or anybody in particular, but it's just so hard to break out of the current system.
I'm not offended by it. I see it every day. I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, and the lobbyists, God bless them, but they also have vested interest in the way the current system operates, and they resist change.
I completely agree. And it's why the legislature has such a bad numbers in polling. I mean, you look at, you know, people talk about Biden's numbers. Go look at the approval rating for Republicans in the Michigan legislature. It's much, much worse than anybody other number. So when they talk about their advantages because of Biden, what I like to look at is their own polling. And it's pretty abysmal, actually. Look at it.
Gonorrhea is more popular than Republicans in the legislature.
It's a good line. I wish I had thought of it. Thank you. I might
go ahead and use it. It's all yours.
Yeah, thanks.
So I want to continue and go back to, we talked a little bit about the statewide election, the impact, and you had really excellent analysis there. What do you think Trump's impact is going to be? He's not going to be on the ballot, right? He may have some of his favorite candidates leading the Republican ticket. He may come back for rallies. What is your sense, Curtis, of what impact Trump is going to have this fall?
The Republican Party has a choice to make. And it's a very difficult choice, I would assume, politically for them. They've been telling people elections are rigged, right? And that elections don't actually matter. And how do you get someone to vote after that? Especially after they go through a primary where somebody's going to get 30% of the vote and be their candidate for governor. And 70% of the people are going to vote for somebody else. Are they going to believe that their candidate didn't win? Are they going to believe that their legislative candidate didn't win? Are they going to believe that, you know, whatever these situations are, I think they put themselves in a very difficult box. I think it's very hard to tell people that elections don't matter and then go get them to vote. You know, we as Democrats, one of our biggest problems for years has been getting turnout, right? And I think we've actually shifted that a little bit where, you know, people understand it a little better. But part of that was always saying that your vote matters. Now they're telling people their vote doesn't matter. I mean, why would they go out and vote after that? So I think it's very difficult. I'll say this. I would love to have Trump in this state as many times as possible after the primary. I think that he certainly brings out some voters, but he turns off the moderates. And I think if he reminds people over and over and over again of what they don't want to go back to. I'm not saying that they're in love with Joe Biden. I'm not saying that they're not legitimately even unhappy with certain things. But I certainly don't think anybody wants to go back to that. And anytime he wants to come in and remind voters in Oakland County, in some of those districts and even suburban Macomb, Grand Rapids area. I mean, we have a seat in Grand Rapids that when he brings one by 18 points, you would have thought that was crazy a decade ago. So Trump has, I think, been a big windfall for the Democratic Party. I would have traded him not being president for all of that. It was one of the worst times in our history. And I'm deeply afraid that if he becomes president again, that the democracy might be over. You know, I mean, I just don't know if the Republic survives that. I want him out stalking for candidates because I don't think he helps anybody except for people that were already going to vote for him.
When it comes to Trump, I mean, the genie is out of the bottle when it comes to the impact that he's had on the Republican Party. You mentioned Kent County. We've got that candidate running in this special election for the state house there who has a litany of statements that are, you know, beyond insane, including the one on camera where he says he tells his daughters if they find themselves the victim of rape to lie back and enjoy it. And this guy is likely to get elected to the state house. He's going to be sitting there across the Capitol from you over in the state house, running for reelection, presumably in a much more competitive seat, in November than the one he'll be elected to, in May. And so I think candidates like that are going to have as much impact or, ability for Democrats running for the legislature to kind of frame the lunacy of the Republican Party is manifesting itself beyond just the persona of Donald Trump.
Oh, absolutely. We traded one Pat Kolbeck for five Pat Kolbecks in the state Senate. now you're having, you know, all this across the state. That guy in particular is awful. Melissa Carone's running for state house. I think the SNL skit was pretty great. I firmly believe, but you don't even have to look at the bottom of the ticket. The bottom of the ticket's harder to get candidates. Look at the top of the ticket. Who are these people? I really think that you're seeing what Trump has done. And I think this week, unfortunately, we saw it with Fred Upton. Now, I don't agree with Fred Upton a lot of things, but he's a good man. The idea that he's being pushed out of politics, somebody who's been in public service all that time, that he's being pushed out for just being a reasonable human, right? Like just being a normal conservative human is not good enough any longer. You have to be willing to basically lie to the people and tell them that they're right, the election was stolen. And if you're not willing to say those words, then you're not a good candidate in the Republican Party any longer. That's terrible.
We want to be respectful of your time, and we're really thankful that you've joined the conversation today. As we part here, what is your prediction on what Michigan is going to look like a year from now when it comes to who's in control in Lansing? What has transpired in the November election when we're looking back on it in April of 2023?
I believe the governor gets reelected. I believe Dan Nessel gets reelected. I believe Jocelyn Benson gets reelected. I believe that the state Senate will be in Democratic hands, including Kevin Hertel, who will be a state senator, which I'll be very proud of, which will continue Hertel serving somewhere in public office since 1974 in Michigan and add to our over 100 years of service in the legislature. I think the House will be very close. I think that there are like 30 seats that are within 5 points of each other, and depending on each individual candidate and everything else, I think they're in the ballgame. But those are the predictions that I would have so far.
Well, Senator Curtis Hertel Jr., thank you very much for joining us this week on A Republic If You Can Keep It.
Thanks for your insight, Curtis, and thanks for your public service. We hope to see you in public service in the future, notwithstanding term limits.
I'm not leaving. I'm going to find ways to serve. I promise, Mark. My first job in politics is working for you at the party, and I can promise you that I haven't changed one bit. We're going to keep fighting, and I'll find ways to serve.
You've been great. I think your brother will be looking for a chief of staff. That'll be interesting.
I hope I got a better offer than that, but thank you.
I'll tell Kevin that the next time I see him.
All right. Thanks.
That's a wrap for this week. Our great thanks to Senator Curtis Hertel Jr. for updating us on so many current issues and politics facing the state.
To be part of our weekly conversation, send us an email, comments@arepublicpodcast.com.
If the Republic is still standing, we'll be back in a week. I'm Mark Brewer.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. As always, thank you for making us part of your day.
You can subscribe to A Republic If You Can Keep It on all major podcast sites. A Republic If You Can Keep It is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.